Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, and I am here with Michael Spath, my co-host. It is November 15th, the Sunday morning after Michigan got beat down by Wisconsin last night. And Mike, I couldn't paint a better picture than in the fourth quarter, Michigan down by six scores, whatever it was, and the rain is just pouring down on a cold Michigan stadium, and Jim Harbaugh is looking as defeated as ever.
So you're saying that this program's been flooded, or it's getting washed out, or Justin, I was thinking about this yesterday. I don't think Jim Harbaugh is as bad of a football coach as Rich Rodriguez, but I think he's a more disappointing football coach than Rich Rodriguez. I think the Jim Harbaugh era is more disappointing than the Rich Rodriguez era, because what you had on that December day in 2014 to where Michigan is yesterday, third straight loss, not even competitive from the by the end of the first quarter. I mean, what, they had one total offensive yard and they were down 14-0, and they started the second quarter. I think it was the first play of the second quarter. They went down 21-0 to Wisconsin. I mean, I think you or one of your colleagues at Blue by 90 posted, it was on Friday maybe, about like, I remember where I was when Michigan beat Wisconsin in 2018 and they went out there and thumped them at the big house. And what a stark contrast from 2 years ago. I mean, let's face it now. We're not talking about this Michigan football team being bad in 2020 alone. From the moment of that Ohio State game in 2018, this program has been on its heels in every single facet. I think I saw, a former colleague, Steve Deese, I think, said that they're 10-9 in their last 19 games. Wow. And maybe like six or seven of those losses have been by 17 points or more. I mean, he's a barely 500 coach since that 2018 Ohio State game. Barely a 500 coach. And frankly, by the end of the year, he'll be under 500 since that Michigan Ohio State game. That's where this program is right now. That is one of the most shocking things I have ever seen. As a sports fan, as a sports commentator, to see where they were, 10-1, ranked in the top five going into that Ohio State game, to where they are now. You know, everybody keeps on trying to pinpoint like when Jim Harbaugh had his guts ripped out and when he became like the shell of his former self. I don't know when that moment was exactly, but I know that this program has cratered since that Ohio State game in 2018. And it just cannot, it can't keep going this direction. They've got to get rid of him.
Yeah. And I'll ask you later in this podcast, kind of what you think about where the Michigan program is at right now compared to where it started, and kind of piggyback on what you just said. But I want to talk about last night as well. How does a Wisconsin team that hasn't practiced, their quarterback didn't even know if he was playing all week, and they came out still more prepared, more ready to play you know, better equipped everything than this Michigan team who has – what were they doing all fall? What was Michigan doing this entire fall when they were apparently practicing through it all? They were ready to play no matter what. And they just look like they have no idea what's going on. There's no game plan. There's no identity. How does that happen on a night where it's a primetime game, even though there's no fans there? How is this team so unprepared?
Well, I think what it ultimately comes down to, and you talk to enough former players Will Heinegger will be able to join us during this podcast a little bit later. But, you know, when you have players that are checked out, when you have guys that are uninterested, when you have guys that don't believe in their coaches, don't believe in each other, when they don't believe in the game plan, when they're questioning and doubting everything that the coaches are teaching them during the week, that's what you see yesterday. You see a team that prepares, you see a team that practices, but it practices by going through the motions. It runs reps, but it's not mentally focused. And so when you get to game time and you've got to play an actual physical opponent, you're not ready because you spent the past 5 days or 6 days or whatever, you know, whatever it is, just kind of going through and being there physically, but not being there mentally. And I think that's where we're at with this Michigan football team. And to me, that is the greatest indictment of a coaching staff, of a team, is when there's just no one wants to play for anybody. They're not playing for their coaches. They're not playing for each other. They're not playing for the Block M. And, you know, while a lot of people would like, you know, call the players, you know, names or get after them and say, like, well, have some pride. And I know even Jim Harbaugh said afterwards, like, have some pride. Oh, Jim, how about you start with having some pride? And if you have pride and you really love this program, then you'll do what you need to do, and that's resign. Because no one believes in you anymore. These players don't believe in you. You know, maybe the next recruiting class does for a little bit, but they're not going to believe in you. The fans don't believe in you. Nobody believes in you anymore. You've lost everybody. And that's what we saw on display yesterday, is you saw a team that doesn't believe in anything anymore. Doesn't believe in a winning culture. Doesn't believe in the Block M. Doesn't believe in their coaches. And the opposite side, you saw a team that believes 100% in its quarterback and its head coach and the red and white of Wisconsin and what they're trying to achieve. That was a stark contrast, at least in my opinion, Justin. I've been doing this for 20 years or so, and that's what I saw yesterday. When you look at it, right from the get-go, 14-0, they had 1 yard of total offense in the first quarter. Have you ever seen that? I'm not just talking about Michigan. I'm talking about watching college football. Have you seen a team get 1 yard of total offense in the first quarter?
Not a team that has weapons. Like I've seen bad offenses from bad football teams that are, you know, in the MAC or even at the bottom level, the Rutgers of the Big Ten, but not Michigan, who has 44 stars on the team. That's what's mind blowing to me. It's not like they don't have the talent. You know, it's obviously a development issue, but I've never seen something like that from a team that is actually, if you look on paper, really talented. And so that's where I think most Michigan fans are so – not even just Michigan fans. Kirk Herbstreit and everybody out there, Joel Klatt, are just dumbfounded at how bad this Michigan football team is, because when you look at the roster, you see a lot of talent. When you looked at it but coming into the season – this was a season that was pretty, you know, exciting for Michigan. They had a new quarterback. They had all that. And it's just in every facet of the game, they have not, you know, produced. They have disappointed. And so it's really dumbfounding. I don't understand. And I don't think anyone understands why it is that way. But the one telling thing to me yesterday was, I believe Michigan was down 28-0 in the second quarter, and it was 3rd and 8. And Michigan ran an off-tackle run. And to me, that is just giving up. You are giving up in the first half of a football game. And I just don't – I mean, what does that say to your players? What does that say to everybody when you call into the huddle and say, yeah, we're going to run an off tackle here. It's 3rd and 8. Especially when your run game has not worked in all 4 games this year. So,
well, it worked in the opener, but yeah, in the last 3 weeks, it hasn't worked at all.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that was the most concerning thing to me, that not only are they struggling on the talent side and the production side, but they are just straight up giving up.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. There were a couple of those moments, the James Franklin moment, Michigan losing 28-0, they're in Wisconsin territory. And, you know, it's 4th and 10, admittedly. Like, it's not, I mean, it's not like there's any reason to believe that Michigan's going to get a 1st down on a 4th and 10 at the, whatever it was, 30-yard line or so, but they trot out Quinn Nordine and kick a field goal down 28-0. And I'm like, what the hell are you, like, what are you doing? Like, just go for it on 4th down. Like, I don't care if you don't get it, but like, just show some fight and go for it. You know, there, what was the score? Was it 21-0 maybe? I think it was 21-0. Maybe it was 28-0 when they marched all the way down the field. They finally had a little bit of life. You know, they've thrown a ball to Chris Evans. It looked like, you know, he got in for the touchdown. They bring it back to the 1-yard line. It's 4th and 1. You've got a 6'5", 245-pound quarterback who all he has to do is fall forward on a quarterback sneak and you score a touchdown. Instead, they've got him lined up in the shotgun.
Yep.
He catches the ball. He tries to get to the line of scrimmage, and already the guard who's pulling has gotten blown up. And he gets pushed back and he doesn't get a touchdown. I mean, you know, it's a team without an identity. It's a team that doesn't do anything well, nothing, like literally nothing. They don't have, you know, when's the last time a defensive player made a play? When is the last time an offensive player, made a play? Actually, we'll get into one bright spot of this game, yesterday, and that was Cade McNamara, but they're completely lost. Like, they have no idea what they're doing. And, you know, Joe Milton, we're 4 games into his starting career, and you don't want to write a kid off. But, I mean, if Cade McNamara is not getting, at least pretty early on in this game against Rutgers next week, an opportunity, I don't know how the coaches can justify that to their teammate, to their team, because, you know, we're 4 games in, and the interception last week against Indiana when they were, it was 31-21, was such a bad interception because you probably had some final momentum going. The interception last night when they're down 7-0 against Wisconsin is one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen a major Division I quarterback throw. I mean, he throws it right to the linebacker, and he, you know, there is a Michigan player behind, but he's like 12 yards behind. That ball was going to finish about 10 yards in front of his wide receiver. It went right to the Wisconsin. I mean, it was like he was thrown to the Wisconsin linebacker. I don't know where it's gone wrong for this kid. You know, he showed a little bit of promise in that first week. He certainly showed a little, some promise in subsequent weeks. But at this point, I think you got to put him down. I think you've got to bench him. You've got to like let him recapture, because I don't think he's got anything. I mean, he looks completely lost out there, completely lost out there. And, you know, now all the comments about Jim Harbaugh being able to develop a quarterback and all these different things. And I think a large part of it is they just put him in terrible situations. Like, they have no idea what they're doing with the play calling. They have, again, no offensive identity. As you mentioned, I mean, the 3rd and 8, but like every single possession, they're starting off and it's like 2nd and long and 3rd and long. And then you're asking the young man to bail you out of every single offensive series. I mean, it is utterly ridiculous how bad they are, and their guards are getting blown up. I mean, we can go down like the list: offensive line, you know, running backs, tight ends. Like, there's nobody, with the exception maybe of the wide receivers, that is doing a damn thing for this Michigan offense right now.
Yeah, I actually was talking to a friend last night, and we kind of compared it to Matthew Stafford with the Detroit Lions. And the way that we compared it was, in order for the Lions to win on offense a lot of the time, or just win in general, Matthew Stafford has to have a perfect game. That's the situation that the Lions put him in. And that's the situation that Michigan has put him in. put Joe Milton in. And he's now made some mistakes on his own that have made him struggle. But before that, Michigan's running game and the offensive line made it so that there was so much pressure on Joe Milton that he had to be a Heisman candidate in order for Michigan to succeed in this season. And he just couldn't do it. And it's understandable for him, but also, you know what, he overthrew another deep ball yesterday that would have been a touchdown. And all he needed to do was float it up there. And it's so frustrating that, you know, when it's advertised all fall that this is the guy, they finally found the guy. He's dropping dimes, 60-yard balls. And then he gets into a game and he has, you know, thrown one good deep ball all year. I don't understand. I think that Michigan fans out there have a serious gripe with some, there should be some lawsuits out there for fake advertising with this football team. Honestly.
Well, Justin, you know, you mentioned, yeah, I mean, he missed, I think it was Blake Corum who came open on a wheel route. Finally, we see a wheel route and he's wide open for a touchdown and he overthrows him. You know, there was a play in the second half, you know, they're backed up in their own territory inside the 20, I think. And he throws a deep ball down the left side in the double coverage when Giles Jackson is sprinting down the middle of the field wide open. I mean, look, every quarterback misses guys, every quarterback, you know, you can show me other than Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and maybe Drew Brees and Tom Brady, like you can take any quarterback at any time in their career. And there's people that are like, oh, he always locks in on the first read. He can't go through his progression. So that's common thread stuff. But at the same time, like he's just not seeing the field. He's not throwing a good ball. He's not a threat in the running game because they've neutered him there. I mean, even yesterday, they finally ran some of those, you know, those quarterback draws where he goes to the right and they pull the two guards. But that's worthless because the guards are just getting pushed back immediately.
Yeah.
But they didn't run read option with him. You know, like do you remember like an actual read option play with him where he can hand off or take it? Like I didn't see one yesterday. No, I mean he's in a bad place because he is suddenly going backwards in every area of his game. And to me, like I think the only sane, sensible thing to do is to sit him down because he still has immense potential. And we saw like what he can be as a leader in week one, but I don't think you're doing him any favor by putting him out there again next week, even against Rutgers, which we'll get to. And, you know, is Michigan going to be the favorite on the road at Rutgers? I don't think they will, which is just ridiculous. But I think they've got to sit him down. I think they've got to let Cade McNamara maybe get the start, run the offense. Cade McNamara looked really good on his opening drive, which came in the middle of the third quarter. He threw a couple of dimes. He had a great touchdown pass and a great 2-point conversion. You know, after that, it's unfortunate because I think the kid was a little bit in the zone and locked in. And what did Michigan do after that? They got a good defensive stop. They're going to put the kid right back on the field, give him an opportunity to capitalize on that momentum. And they run the kicker. Like, no reason to do it. They're down 24 points, and they rush the kicker, get a hit on the kicker. They give him a first down. Wisconsin takes what I think it was only like 6 minutes off the clock. Mm-hmm. And by that time, and score another touchdown, go up 42-11. And at that point, now Caden McNamara, instead of being like all these positive juices flowing, he's just sitting there. And so finally he goes back out there. He doesn't look as sharp anymore. The energy is gone. He throws a couple of wobbly passes, which, you know, people have said that he has, you know, doesn't have as strong of an arm. But he just doesn't look like he's locked in anymore. And the clock just sort of runs out. Michigan loses 49-11. So, you know, but I think you give him an opportunity to start this game against Rutgers and say, you know, let's this kid can do. Maybe he has those intangible qualities we're looking for in a starting quarterback. Because I don't think it hurts at this point. You know, I don't know that Joe Milton is the quarterback of the future. Maybe he still is underneath the right tutelage. But you got 4 games left in the season. And we talked about this, I think, on Friday's podcast, Justin. Like, what's there left to play for? Nothing. there ain't anything left to play for this season. Literally, everything is about playing for 2021 now. And so why not give the younger guy an opportunity and see what he can do and see if he can rally the troops, because what they're doing right now ain't working.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing is that it looks like Michigan has played worse and worse every single week. We talked about it in our earlier podcast, you know, what is a successful season? Well, we wanted to see progression. We wanted to see guys develop. We weren't even asking them to win a ton of football games. We just wanted to see for 2021, especially after last week's game against Indiana. Now going forward, what we are saying is we want to see somebody, you know, make some progression and develop and show some signs of life. And instead, it's gone backwards completely. Mm-hmm. And it's not only gone backwards in the coaching and the play calling, but like you said, Joe Milton's development and his play has gone backwards. The running game has gone backwards. The defense has gone backwards. Hassan Haskins only had one carry last night.
Wait, what?
For 6 yards.
Oh, my God.
How is that possible?
I didn't realize that.
I mean, Blake Corum had seven carries for 5 yards. Zach Charbonnet had 3 carries for 21 yards, which was the high of the day. But Hassan Haskins, let me pull up the stat real quick. He, in 4 games, is averaging 8 yards per carry, but only has 21 carries through 4 games.
Hmm.
How many running backs had 21 carries in one game yesterday across the country?
I don't know, 40, maybe.
Probably
something like that.
Most of them, right? It's just,
how do you explain that as an offensive coaching staff that your best running back had one carry in the game? How do you explain that, Justin?
And how do you explain it to Donovan Edwards, the running back recruit who's on the sideline for that game? How do you go into the locker room or Schembechler afterwards and you're given the pitch for Donovan Edwards to come to Michigan and say, we'd love to have you come here, but maybe you might get one carry a game? There's no way that these guys, J.J. McCarthy's on the sideline as well. And these guys, I'm sorry, but they've got to be looking at this saying, can I call somebody else? Is there any other teams? Are there any other teams out there that still want me? And there's 100 other teams that are going to say yes. And so
I think the moment
any of these guys to decommit right now.
Well, I mean, signing day is in the first Wednesday of December, I believe. Maybe it's the second Wednesday of December. So there's a little bit of time. If there's a lot of people that said like, hey, you know, JJ is the quarterback of the future, which I'm so tired of hearing about the quarterback of the future, because I've said this in the past, I don't give a damn about any given individual recruit, mm-hmm. because a program is bigger than any individual recruit. And he might be a good looking quarterback, but if you don't have the coaching to coach him up, it doesn't make a difference if he's a five-star talent or not. And right now they don't have the coaching to coach him up. And so JJ McCarthy would be wasted at the University of Michigan with this coaching staff. And so, you know, I think there's, a lot of people jumped off the bandwagon. I mean, yesterday, on social media and the text messages I get from friends and family, like, everybody is furious right now. Everybody seemingly wants to move on from Jim Harbaugh. But, you know, some people are still circling. Well, you know, you got to bring in J.J. McCarthy and give him a chance. If the five-star quarterback decommits and goes somewhere else, and Donovan Edwards goes somewhere else, and we already saw Rashawn Benny commit to Michigan State over Michigan – just after the Michigan State game, and now the Spartans have gone out there and gotten, you know, boat raced the last 2 weeks against Iowa and Indiana. If you start to see some of these kids look elsewhere and decommit, you know, then the wheels are off even more than they are off, and they're barely hanging on right now. So, yeah, those are going to be signs that the program just can't recover if they lose those guys. Maybe they don't lose those guys. Maybe Jim Harbaugh is an amazing salesman with J.J. McCarthy, but I don't know how you look at this program, especially if you're a quarterback. I mean, look at what he's done other than Jake Rudock. I mean, you know, like, Wilton Spate had a good start, then petered out. Brandon Peters, his prize recruit, did nothing at Michigan. John O'Korn, transfer that came in, they thought he was going to be an impact player. was awful by the end of his career. You know, Shea Patterson, former five-star, was pretty good at Ole Miss, comes to Michigan, goes backwards, doesn't even get drafted, gets cut after 2 weeks as a free agent. And now you've got, you know, you've got Joe Milton, who looks worse in week four than he did in week one. Looks worse than a quarterback who had one day of practice in 21 days in Graham Mertz. Yeah, I'm not sure as a quarterback how you come to the University of Michigan. I wouldn't anyway. You know, I just can't justify, or I wouldn't be able to justify, you know, going to Michigan when they are wasting the talent in every capacity. So, Justin, offense was just absolutely awful yesterday. 11 points scored. You know, 8 of them scored when Cade McNamara came in the game. Didn't do anything else. What'd they finish with rushing yards? I think 47, 2.5 yards per carry. Yep. You know, Ronnie Bell had a couple of good moments. You know, Giles Jackson had a nice catch. Other than that, you're not really, you know, Mike Sanders still had one good, you know, a good catch from Cade McNamara. Nothing else to talk about with that offense. They're completely lost right now. The defensive side of the ball. Yeah.
You mentioned Ronnie Bell having a bright spot, and he did in the second half. Again, the same as he did against Indiana. Why are we waiting until the second half to try to get the ball to Ronnie Bell when it was obvious going into the season that he was our best receiver?
Well, because these coaches don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're at a complete loss. Like, they must be, because to have Hassan Haskins have one carry in the game, like, that's not even remotely possible. It's not. Like, they have no philosophy for what they're doing, and they get early in the game, and I think, like, whatever they came up with in pregame, like, I don't know if they just abandon or what happens, but no, I mean, this is my biggest beef with the Jim Harbaugh era and with a lot of coaching staffs, is when they waste their talent. And they're wasting their talent at a level I can't remember. Maybe the end of the Hoke era in 2014, but maybe even beyond that. I mean, I don't know that it's in my lifetime I've seen a team with talent more wasted than this one. So kudos to this coaching staff for that. So, Justin, that's the offensive side of the ball. No real hope unless maybe if Cade McNamara starts on Saturday. But if he does, you know, what are the chances they get the most out of him? Not really expecting it. Defensive side of the ball, you know, they moved Carlo Kemp from defensive tackle to strong side anchor end to fill in for Aiden Hutchinson. He got the first sack in 2.5 games for Michigan. Interior was Donovan Jeter and Chris Hinton. You know, they were okay, I guess. Luigi Villain and Taylor Upshaw filled in for Quiddy Pay. Wisconsin wasn't even traditional Wisconsin this game. They put up like 350 yards rushing, and so many of them came on end arounds and rushes to the outside. I think they said that 4 wide receivers ran the football for Wisconsin, and there were, I think, at least 4 players that had 65-plus yards rushing against Michigan. I mean, they outflanked Michigan. They figured that the linebackers were going to get sucked in, which they did. Josh Ross and Cam McGrone were biting on the fakes all day long. They didn't have the cornerbacks on the outside to take on the blockers. I mean, you know, Graham Mertz didn't even have to throw the ball very much to be effective in this game. When he did, he usually found somebody pretty open. I mean, this was another side of the ball that's a complete loss right now. Like, I don't think they know. They have nothing that they do well. They have nobody who's making plays. Dax Hill, who is the most talented player on the defense, is kind of left out on an island because there's nobody around him that is doing anything else. I mean, they're just – I don't even know what to do with it, Justin. I mean, they're just – they are at a complete loss on that side of the ball too.
Well, Dax Hill led the team in tackles with 11, and your safety should never lead your team in tackles. He's not even the Viper that, you know, Michael Barrett is, that Jabril Peppers was, where he's playing up all the time. He's playing back, and somehow he still is the first guy to get to the running back a lot of the time. So if your linebackers are not leading your team in tackles, that is a big, big problem on the defensive side. And honestly, Wisconsin scored 49 points. They scored 21 in the second half. They could have gotten to 70 if they wanted to. They shut it down pretty much in the second half and had, you know, 6-7 minute drives. If they wanted to pass the ball and get and run the score up, they could have, and Michigan would have had no chance in stopping it, because even in the second half, it couldn't have been more obvious that Wisconsin was going to try and run the football, and Michigan still had no shot in stopping it. They're that disappointing on the defensive line in the front seven. They have no push. They have no fight. It's again, when you're running the ball against Michigan, you can get through to the secondary with ease. You're hitting holes that are wide open, and that, yeah, they were pretty creative with their end arounds and things like that. But it wasn't like they didn't need to be. And so it's the blueprint for beating Michigan is now just do anything. It used to be throw it up to the receivers. And I actually thought that the secondary in the first quarter or so had a pretty good had some good plays. I thought Vincent Gray made a few really good tackles in the first quarter. I thought he made some great plays in the secondary, and so did Jamon Green until he walked off with an injury. So they for one week were not the actual problem. The front seven with the absence of Quiddy Pay and Aiden Hutchinson were.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, whatever Wisconsin wanted to do in that game, they could do. And it is interesting that the defensive backs were not, I don't say that, yeah, they weren't the biggest weakness on the field. I thought it was probably Vincent Gray's best game in four games so far for Michigan. Is that something to build on for him? Hopefully for him, that's an opportunity for the rest of them. I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, I think we started off this podcast talking about how the players are not bought in, how they don't believe in the coaches. And you can see that, because when you're not playing with confidence, when you don't believe in your system, when you don't believe in your game plan, when you don't believe in the way that they're teaching you, you just don't get the most out of yourself. You don't play confident. When you don't play confident, and you're second guessing everything on the field, it's when you're getting pushed around. You know, it's when you're not in the right position. I mean, so many times Michigan was not in the right position yesterday. You know, I didn't chart the game. We were watching it live, but, and I know you do this sometimes, Justin, I would love to see how many MAs, how many missed assignments, those linebackers had, because they were never in the right position. I mean, it's just another group that's underperforming and underwhelming and being underdeveloped. I just find myself, I mean, in some ways at a loss, even though we've talked for the last 40 minutes or so, because I can't, to a man, like, tell me guys that are performing, tell me guys that are getting the most out of themselves, tell me the guys that are getting the job done and looking good out there. And it's maybe Dax Hill, but even Dax Hill, I don't think is playing his best football. And so when it's like that, when you look on the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, and you say, like, okay, here are 40 guys between those two sides, and 38 of them are not playing good football, you know, you've got a major problem, because this is when it's just completely, I mean, this is 2014, this is 2008, this is getting worse before it's getting better. I mean, you got Rutgers this week. And normally Rutgers is the salvation to everybody's problems, which on the road, I don't know if there's been an opening line yet, but as I said, I would not be surprised if Michigan is down. And here is where where it's really bad, Justin, is if you ask us tomorrow, if you ask us on Friday, either one of us picking Michigan to beat Rutgers next week, I don't think either one of us is. And I don't think if you, when we see those staff predictions next week from the Wolverine, from 24/7 Sports, from MGo Blog, from Detroit News and Free Press, from whatever media entities cover Michigan, I'm going to go out there and guess that 70% of them or more are going to be picking Rutgers to beat Michigan on Saturday night. Think about that. Year six of the Jim Harbaugh era, and they're going to be picked to lose to Rutgers on the road. That is how far this program has fallen. And, you know, let's talk about the big picture. Like, what do you do with that? Like, you know, we've said repeatedly, or I've said repeatedly, like, Ward's probably not going to get rid of Jim. Jim controls, you know, is essentially Ward's boss. With the financial impact right now, you've talked about that a lot. Like, you can't let go of the guy. The buyout's too big. But here we are 3 weeks later, and I don't know there's any – you can take all that stuff and you just throw it out, because there's really no justification anymore for bringing him back in 2021.
Yeah, and I think that the big question that I saw on Twitter last night, which was a great, great question, and it's so sad to say, because you're talking about Michigan struggling to beat Rutgers next week, which obviously we don't know what's going to happen, but that's what we're thinking is going to happen. And imagine saying that at the, you know, middle of the 2018 year, even middle of last year, when Michigan is dominating Michigan State 44-10, and predicting the future and saying, yes, next year in 2020, Michigan's going to be 1-4 and they might not be favored to beat Rutgers. What, how, that's got to be the lowest of lows for Michigan football right now. And so the question I have for you is, let's say Jim Harbaugh does leave after this year. Mm-hmm. Does Jim Harbaugh leave this Michigan program in better or worse shape than when he got here in 2014?
Wow. Whoa, what a question. Holy whatever. I mean, I think it's better. I do think it's better because he's upgraded the facilities during his time. His recruiting classes consistently are better than the recruiting classes under Brady Hoke, under Rich Rodriguez. And so when you inherit the team talent in 2021, you inherit 5 years of players that that are pretty well regarded and are, for the most part, you have depth at every position except for defensive tackle. But you've got, you know, you're not making the most out of them. You're wasting it, but you've got depth and talent along the offensive line. You've got, you know, that in the running back room, in the receiver room, at tight end. They need to move away from recruiting Massachusetts so much and maybe, just maybe, you know, go into the Buckeye State and try to recruit the state of Ohio, since it's been the lifeblood of this program and for 100 years. And Jim Harbaugh just kind of gave up and said, I know I can't win a recruiting battle in Ohio. But no, I think it is in better shape than when he started. But I think it's, what's interesting is, like, I think Rich Rodriguez, when he left, he was not in better shape than when he got here. When Brady Hoke got there, it was in better shape than when he started because he had some good recruiting classes. Yeah, I mean, I do think it's in better shape, but I think that whoever the next coach is, if they have a next coach, he's got a lot of work to do, because he needs to essentially take a team that's beaten down, that's not playing with confidence. He's got to restore that confidence. He's got to implement, create an identity on offense. He's got to find a defensive coordinator who is not over the hill, who's not a one-trick pony, who can get this team to play completely man-to-man and zone and be good at both of them. You know, they've got a lot of work to do if there is a next football coach in 2021, but I do believe that the foundation is in a strong place for him to do so if they decide to move on from him. But Justin, let me ask you this, like, at this point, you know, don't you have to move on? Don't you have to, if you don't want to fire him, like, if you don't want, like, that around your neck and around his neck, like, don't you have to? You owe it to this program to move on, and you've got to find some way. You've got to talk to Jim. And if Jim stubbornly says, like, I guess that's what it comes down to. If Jim stubbornly says, no, I'm not doing anything unless you fire me, are you willing to fire him?
You have to be. This program, I understand the financial situation. I understand that, yes, you know, we talked about it. You said that there shouldn't even have to be a transition period where Michigan struggles, but you also just said that there's a lot of work to do. So I do think there would be a transition period. But there has to be a better option out there. And I think Jim Harbaugh is a really, really good X's and O's guy. But he is not a player's coach, and he does not get the best out of his guys. So you have to look at this and say, this is not our best option for Michigan to be a program atop the Big Ten in the country right now. And if you're Ward Manuel, that's your job. It's a tough job. Jim's your friend. You played with him, and you're a Michigan guy. You're both Michigan guys, but you have to make the tough decisions. And Jim is just not the best guy for the job right now. And that is, it's clear. It's as clear as day. And there's not really any data or an analysis to prove you wrong on that. And so how do you go to the Board of Regents? How do you talk to your donors and your alum and your fans and your students and even the players there, that how do you say, yes, I believe Jim Harbaugh can do this still? There is literally nothing to prove that. And so I don't see how you can sit there with a straight face and say that to anybody right now. So you have to figure something out. Like you said, if he doesn't want to walk away, you have to pull the plug, or work some backdoor deal out that says, let's line up something for you somewhere else, and we'll make it look like you left, or whatever you need to do it. But it's just, it hasn't worked out for you. And unfortunately, maybe things go differently if the 2016 game against Ohio State, if JT's not called short, or if he was called short, if the Michigan State punt is not fumbled, maybe we're on a completely different trajectory. And I truly believe that we are, because it's just, I don't know, those games, it just seems to have killed the Jim Harbaugh that we knew. And it's some different guy that's out there. And so, unfortunately, that's where we're at right now with this Michigan program. And there's no light at the end of the tunnel right now, because again, I think there's, like you said, there's a lot of work to do for Matt Campbell or whoever out there is going to be the next guy, if there is a next guy. But the options are either Jim Harbaugh next year and you go through the same shit, or a new guy who has to, rebuild a little bit and get some new recruits in. So unfortunately,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, unfortunately, for Michigan fans out there and you listeners, and for you and I, Mike, it's going to be another 3, 4, 5 years until Michigan is competing for a Big Ten title.
See, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all, because I think if you hire the right coach, because what that ultimately comes down to is having the talent in place to be able to compete for a Big Ten title. And as I was saying, if you look at those recruiting classes, and the talent is there. So, and look what Brady Hoke did with Rich Rod's recruits, and look what Jim Harbaugh did with Brady Hoke's recruits. Is so often you can come in and you can energize guys, and you can galvanize everyone and put the chip on their shoulder, and you can find success really quickly. And I think if the right coach, I don't think it's a 4 or 5 year project. I think you have the right coach and someone who comes in, takes over the talent in this room, and can immediately start competing. Now, maybe you can't immediately start competing with Ohio State, but you can compete with everybody else in the Big Ten, because on paper anyway, you are more talented than every other team in the Big Ten, save one other one, and that's Penn State. But Penn State is also cratering right now, so you'll have an opportunity there. So I don't think it's a 4 or 5 year build. I think you can win right away. I think it's probably a, 3 or 4 year build to try to get up to Ohio State's. I mean, it's going to take a long time, but at least you give yourself a chance. If you bring in a new coach, and Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell, whoever the guy is, as I've said repeatedly, as you agree with me, everybody keeps on, I saw it again. Well, who's going to be better than Harbaugh? Oh my God. They're never going to get anybody better than Harbaugh. Just shut up. Like, that's not an answer. Okay. And you can't be afraid of moving on. And at the end of the day, what you do is, and I don't know how many times I have to say this, but Ward Manuel has the entire disposal of resources. You go and call those coaches, the ones I talked about a couple weeks ago. You go and call Nick Saban. You go and call Bill Belichick. You call Sean Payton. Andy Reid, you call Dabo Swinney, you call Urban Meyer, and you say, guys, I need some help. Who are the bright coaches that you think are going to be future stars as coach, as head coaches? Who do you think you really like, who you came in contact with the last couple of years, who you think, given the resources, the opportunity, are going to be a huge success? And you pick their brains and you let them tell you. And because those guys are the smartest football coaches in the game. And you know what? Hopefully there's some combination that they come up with where there's maybe like the same guy gets mentioned like three or four times by all these different coaches. And you say, all right, I'm going to go interview that guy. I'm going to talk to him. If he fits this program and he's got the recommendation of all these coaches, that's who I'm hiring to be the next football coach at the University of Michigan. Maybe that guy is a head coach already. Maybe that guy is Luke Fickell. Maybe that guy is Matt Campbell. Maybe that guy is, you know, at a smaller school. But that's what I would do. And then you go out there and you try to find your Juwan Howard. You try to find your Dabo Swinney. You try to find, you know, there's a lot more coaches that come up as assistant coaches and come up as nobodies than there are that just jump from program to program as major somebodies. You know, Nick Saban and Urban Meyer are few exceptions of guys who are big names who went to a bigger name school. That just doesn't happen a ton in college sports anymore because they're paying everybody too well. Because you like people mentioned Mario Cristobal at Oregon. I mean, he's getting paid like $6 million and he's and Nike chairman Phil Knight is there. Like, you think he's going to let him go for, hey, Michigan wants to offer you 8, I'll give you 10. Like, the money has been too good across college football, where every program is paying their head coach millions of dollars to be able to go out there and steal these guys from other programs. Now, maybe that changes because the money thing is going to be an issue. If I'm Ward Manuel, I'm going up to Stephen Ross. I'm going up to Al Glick. I'm going to my donors and I'm saying, look, man, like, you have been an incredibly generous donor to the university. I need $5 million. I need $8 million. Like, I know this is crazy, but I got to buy Jim Harbaugh out. I got to move on from this albatross. And can you help us out? Because you love this university. You want to see us be great. Now, if those guys are really loyal to Jim, then you're kind of stuck. But otherwise, you know, you've got to do that. And I'll say one more thing about the financial. I was talking to a friend of mine, Justin, who has had season tickets. He and his family, they have 8 season tickets. They upgraded to luxury boxes a couple of years ago. And he said that he talked to his whole family and not one of them has any intention of renewing their tickets for next year, including the luxury box. And so we don't know because there's no fans allowed at these games right now. I suspect that after this game yesterday and what we think would be a Rutgers loss, that Thanksgiving weekend, if there were fans, if you could have 100,000 people at that game Thanksgiving weekend against Penn State, I bet you there would be less than 60,000 that would show up to that game. I think you'd have a empty big house. And we don't know because they're like, we, you know, who knows if they'll be allowed to have fans in 2021. I think there probably will be. We just got some good news about the vaccine from Pfizer and other people that are working on it. And so hopefully we're in a much better position. But money is ultimately going to talk. And when they send out those season renewals, my brother has season tickets. You know, so many friends and family have season tickets. And all of them are going like, you know what? Pandemic, we're a little bit tighter on money. Do I really want to spend $1,200, $1,800, $2,500 on season tickets? If Jim Harbaugh's coming back and I'm expecting more of this same shit, and I have not, I mean, everybody's saying no, they're going to get rid of their tickets. No, they're going to get rid of their tickets. Now, that's a great thing to say hypothetically or in theory when you're frustrated and disappointed, and when it's actually time to be in front of you, maybe you just keep on getting them. But if you bring Jim Harbaugh back in 2021 after what's probably going to end up being a 2-6 season for Michigan, maybe 3-5, if you bring him back, and you go into next year and you desperately need to sell luxury boxes, you desperately need to sell tickets to boost the financial success or the financial opportunity of this athletic department, I think that is ultimately when you're going to realize, like, crap, we're in trouble. Because where's the excitement? Where's the energy? Where's the anticipation for the future underneath Jim Harbaugh? It's vanished. It's gone, Justin.
Yeah, and that is where we're at. And so I've been sold the you know, Rich Rod was gonna come in and do it right away. Brady Hoke's gonna come in and do it right away, and then Jim Harbaugh is gonna come in and do it right away. And so that's why I just believe that it is gonna be 4 or 5 years, because I've never seen it be right away. Yes, Jim Harbaugh had him, you know, competing in 2015 and 2016, but they just didn't do it. So I don't know. It's just so frustrating to sit here, and in year six we're still in this spot. And after 2000, you know, since Lloyd Carr left in 2006, 2007, it's been the same shit for 13 years. So I think for those people that are trying to, you know, are thinking about not renewing their tickets, they're saying the same thing, right? They're saying, how is 2021 going to be different than the last 13 years? And so with Jim Harbaugh, it's not going to be. And we don't know if with a new guy it will be either. But I think, again, it's, you got to try. You at least have to give it a shot. And so for Ward Manuel, he's got some tough decisions. We talked about what is a successful season. Obviously it's not successful, but even after the Indiana game, we said, you know, we want to see some fight. We want to see some progression. Now it's just like, you want to see them not completely blow up. And I don't even know, you know, they already have last night. Obviously they did. But now it's just like, keep it within 60 versus Ohio State, and Michigan fans will think that's a win at this point. So I don't know where to even go from at this point. We'll talk about, you know, I'm sure the game a little bit more later this week. We'll talk about the game leading up to Rutgers, which is, you know, huge, big matchup now, Michigan versus Rutgers. So we'll talk about that later this week. Mike, do you have anything else for today?
You know what, Justin? First, props. Thanks to our great sponsors, Wolverine State Brewing Company. I haven't learned yet. I'm curious to see how many of the Michael Speth Condor chicken sandwiches were sold. I know that you and Jacqueline got one apiece. So thanks for that. I had some friends text me pictures of going to Wolverine State Brewing Company and picking up their chicken and waffle sandwich. Thanks to them. Thanks to Kaepnick Insurance Group, where I work and where we're always looking out for the clients. I'll share a story, probably in tomorrow's podcast, a little bit about, you know, something we just did recently for a client that I was really impressed and kind of felt like, okay, I'm at the right company, because, we had an opportunity where we could have, you know, really found a way to milk someone. And instead we like completely, you know, we completely did what was best for the client. We didn't get any money from it, no business. But that's what they're all about. They're advocates and consultants. And like I said, I'll share a little more about that, because I thought this was so cool. And so thanks to Kaepnick Insurance Group, Lewis Jewelers, where Ann Arbor gets engaged. Great present for your family and friends as you're getting closer to the holidays. So check out their website, lewisjewelers.com. You know, Justin, I woke up today. My wife let me sleep in a little bit because I went to bed pretty late last night. I was on social media a little bit too much, was a little too angry and frustrated and annoyed, as I usually get. You know, I had a friend this morning tell me, hey, you got to give up social media. Like, it's just going to ruin your life, especially the way that Michigan's playing. But we came out this morning. We brewed the coffee. My wife had made butterscotch pumpkin muffins yesterday. We ate that. We sat there with little boy John. I was coming up on 11 months. He ate his breakfast, his watermelon, and we listened to actually Christmas songs. And everybody was smiling, everybody was happy, and everybody was having a good morning, even though it's really crummy weather here in Southeast Michigan. And you know what? The sun rose. You know, the sun rose. You know, we're gonna move on. We'll talk more about Michigan Rutgers this week. We'll talk on our Monday podcast. We'll look more at, you know, we're going to do some position grades, which, oof, man, remember we had that idea like on Friday, like let's do position grades midway through the through point of the season. Like right now, does anybody just in, you don't need to go every position, but like, does anybody right now, nobody gets an A. I'm not giving anybody an A. There's no position group that gets an A. Like how many of them are going to pull better than a D, you know?
Not many.
And like, not many. So we'll do that on Monday's podcast. Looking forward to the week. And honestly, Justin, hockey, Michigan hockey, if you're listening to this podcast on Sunday morning, Michigan hockey plays tonight against Arizona State. They won on Saturday, 8-1. They look good. You know, they're going to play next weekend. Basketball is not too far off here. We're supposed to have a schedule very soon. You know, we'll talk about some of the positives going on. Women's basketball team. You got the big recruiting class coming for Juwan Howard. We'll have lots and lots to talk about, but you know, I told Brandon Brown, our friend and the publisher of Wolverine Digest, last week, I said, look, man, I'm like, you can't write these stories about Harbaugh anymore. You've written a couple of them. So at some point you're just kicking a dead horse and then you're just a bad human because you're kicking a dead horse. Mm-hmm. And I said, so, you know, maybe move on from that and kind of focus on something else after this Wisconsin game. And so then he texted me last night and he's like, I don't know, dude. He's like, I think the only reasonable thing right now is to kick the dead horse. And I agreed with him. I mean, that's where Michigan is. If you're trying to cover this team, if you're doing a podcast, if you're a fan is, the horse is dead, but I mean, it's like, it's so utterly, shocking and disappointing and frustrating and that there's nothing, you have nothing left. You have nothing left. You're emotionally drained as a fan. But I really, really feel bad for these players because they didn't sign up for this. They came to the University of Michigan to compete for championships, to be the best they can possibly be, to develop academically and athletically, to maybe get a chance to play in the NFL draft because they believed in this coaching staff. And this coaching staff has utterly failed them in every capacity. And that to me is the unfortunate part. And I know Jim Harbaugh's talking about, you know, show some pride and we got to figure out the guys that have pride. And I want to say to Jim, like, do you have pride? Mm-hmm. Does Josh Gattis and Don Brown have pride? Does Sean Nua have pride? Because if you guys have pride, then you'll get more out of these guys than you're getting right now. And frankly, Jim, if you love the University of Michigan, as much as you say that you love the University of Michigan, you got to walk away because you're not the guy anymore. You're not getting the job done. And you're taking this program into the depths of hell right now. And so, you know, Red Berenson, who I just had talked to my class last week, he said something to me a couple of years ago. He's like, you know, he said, look, at some point here, and he was kind of towards the end of his career, he's like, if I know that I'm not helping this program, if I know that I'm standing in the way of it being good, I'm going to walk away. And I think he probably, it took 1 year longer than what he actually should have. I think he probably should have left. He realizes, look, he's like, it's just time. Like, you know, for whatever reason, you know, my methods, the way that I coach is just not resonating with the players nowadays. And I need to step aside for Michigan hockey to be as good as it can possibly be. And they went out and got Mel Pearson. And so far it's been pretty good. But that's what he realized. It's like, I can't stand in the way. I love this place too much. If I'm not a big part of the reason we're having success, then I've got to walk away. And that's where Jim Harbaugh is. And I don't know if he's selfless enough to do that. I don't know that he, you know, I've heard some pettiness things that he's gotten upset about. But if you love this University of Michigan as much as you say you do, you've got to move on because because Michigan deserves better than this. And for whatever reason, you can't deliver anymore. And it's sad and it's heartbreaking, for everybody. But that's where we are, Justin. It's time for the marriage, between Michigan and Jim Harbaugh to officially end.
And, I'll read a text message that I just received from a friend who is a huge fan of Michigan football, is very, very invested. And he said, I will tell you that this team has made me not enjoy college football, and that makes me sad. And so I think there's a lot of people out there that think, you know, college football is the one thing that they look forward to the most. And this team has kind of crushed that. So I feel very similar. And it's very disappointing for a lot of fans out there. Maybe we need to like talk about our favorite movies or something. We need a different topic on here because it's just gonna get more and more depressing as we go. And so maybe we'll try to come up with something. But thank you, Mike, for your thoughts today on a
brutal.
Tough Sunday morning to talk about it. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be a downer. I think like many Michigan fans, I think my thoughts and your thoughts resonate with a lot of Michigan fans right now, where that's utter disbelief on this Sunday morning, shock and awe, sadness. I mean, I think we're all sad because we realize that this is over with, and you know, anger and you know whatever. Just whatever adjective you want to describe your Michigan fandom right now, but this is as disparate as I've ever been. You know, I think about what it was like under Rich Rod. Again, 2014, I was out of commission. I was dealing with a major medical issue, and so I don't remember the 2014 season. But I mean, this is low. This is absolutely low. It's depressing. It's to the point where I saw a lot of people say this yesterday, Justin, and I kind of agree. That I just don't know that it's good to even watch the games. Like come Saturday night, they play Rutgers, I think 7:30 PM on Big Ten Network, maybe for your own sanity, for my own sanity, just don't watch the game. And when can you, you know, yesterday was on in the background. We played cards, we drank some wine, we had a good dinner. But I got into it a little bit too much. Maybe the answer is just not to watch, not to, because you're going to care. You're absolutely going to care. And so maybe you just, you know, turn off the emotions, like, you know, turn off the well or turn the handle off or like that, because it's just breaking your heart week after week. And it's really sad to see.
It is. And so we'll try to put our thoughts into words for the rest of the week and this season. And then hopefully, you know, as we move forward with basketball, there'll be some more bright spots to talk about. You can follow us at Stadium Main Pod on Twitter. You can see all of Mike's thoughts about the program on Twitter as well. I don't know if people want to read that either. I'm not sure, but you can see that at Michael Spath, ITH on Twitter, and I am Justin Rowe 92 on Twitter as well. So
I think this will be a good week to take a break from Twitter, honestly. other than tweeting the pod to let people know when it's out. I don't think anything needs to be said on Twitter this week.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, it's you can see if we do put anything out there this week, you can find us there. But like, subscribe, all that stuff on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and go check out our sponsors, you know, give them some love because we do appreciate them. We will see you guys all tomorrow.
This is the Stadium and Main Podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.